March the 2nd, and we are the Education Subcommittee of Ways and Means, and we are talking to TSBC. And because we asked too many questions last week, they didn't get finished. So not their fault, but we will continue with Vicki and Heidi. And why don't you go ahead?
Mr. Chair, just real members subcommittee real quickly. If you go back to the 26th on OLIS, you'll find the presentation on the computer. And then when they are done, we'll have to go back to today's date to get the Department of Education's presentation. So just to keep you in the loop.
I'm on site 22.
I don't even know which subcommittee I'm on.
And they're starting, I believe, on page 23.
Good morning, Chair Monroe, Co-Chair Comp, members of the committee. For the record, Vicki Chamberlain, Director of Teacher Standards and Practices Committee, and with me I have
Heidi Seif, Chairman of Teacher Standards and Practices,
and Superintendent at Umatilla School Board. So what we have ahead is the summary for professional practices, the budget environment, which includes our KPM performance. Also, what we have ahead of us, this upcoming biennium, and a brief discussion of our policy option packages, since this is our only time in front of you. The professional practices area is a unique area of the commission. It is where the commissioners read the investigation reports and decide whether misconduct rises to the level of a dismissal or a charge. And Heidi, you want to talk briefly about how that works?
Sure. Senator Monroe, Representative Comp, members of the committee, Fridays are usually the day that we tackle discipline as a commission, and this is most definitely the probably the most intense day of our work. The other days we're, of course, tackling important issues, but on Fridays we're deciding the fate of an educator as well as protecting students, and both of those are extremely important to us. So one of the things that are important to keep in mind are the various areas of misconduct. Most recently, it's pretty easy to reflect upon. We've had cheating on tests, we've had anger management issues, sped files that aren't updated, as well as things as slight or perceived to be slight as improper movie content or sexual involvement with students. So it's always the major improprieties that receive the most media attention, but there's a lot of improprieties for which teachers are reported to Teacher Standards and Practices Commission.
So this slide, it seems like almost every single day there's some new article or some new news clip out there about bad conduct. And the two things that we're seeing, I don't think the conduct is increasing so much as I think people are reporting more. I think their threshold of tolerance is certainly lower. But something I have seen, and we have seen, is an increase in women being reported for misconduct, sexual misconduct in particular. I have no explanation for that, but noticed last night that two new cases across the nation popped up were situations with women. So there was a KGW report last week about this, and just wanted to mention that. The clients that are served are the educators who are investigated because they're waiting for the reports to get done, the school districts and the ESDs who report them or for whom they may work, that not necessarily always the charter schools, and of course the public is who we want to protect if people engage in any kind of misconduct. But most often we're focused on highest priority is anything that can impact the safety of kids or the well-being of kids at all.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Huffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Vicki, I don't know if you're the right one, you know, to follow the the process on this, but back in 09 we passed the, and I hate to use the term, but pass the trash was what the Oregonian had named it. And I think a few of us on this were actually working on that.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know if that work has been productive? Have we tightened up the process where school districts can't you know, they have to go ahead and divulge, not pass a teacher along that's been accused or whatever.
Chairman Rowe and Representative Huffman, I think it's improved somewhat. I have heard little or nothing about passing the trash, if you will. Where I think we maybe missed the boat is the definition of trash. In other words, the way the bill was written, it's exclusively about sexual misconduct, and it's a little narrow because it's sexual misconduct with a student, and it doesn't always, it's not always the case. And there's some fairly offensive behavior that doesn't rise to the criminal level that would not fall under the umbrella of that particular statute, which basically says that school districts are required to forward the personnel file for anybody who is engaged in that while they're in the employment of a school district to another school district, and of course report to TSPC. But I think at the time we thought it would be wonderful, but the sexual misconducts, even at, for all the news media they get, are the exception to the rule in the cases we investigate. So it's like 0.003% of all the cases and complaints we get. So if we want to fix something, I would broaden the scope of when those files should be forwarded.
Okay. May I add to that? One addition, if I may, is that as a school district perspective from hiring, the key piece that that bill really brought to our attention from a hiring perspective is now one of our required steps in our district is to check the TSPC discipline file because it is public for any candidate for which we're reviewing. And that discussion did not start until after that initiative began.
But that's your local policy?
Correct.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
So this next slide gives you an idea about the growth in the number of complaints that the commission has received. And if you'll notice, from 2005, there have been over 200 complaints a year. And the way our statute is written, we're required to investigate if there's a complaint or even information. So, for example, if the first time we hear about it's in the newspaper or the news, then the duty under the statute is to open a file and look into it, do an investigation. The yellow bars, though, point out the growth in patron complaints. And what we consider a patron is anybody who isn't a school district administrator reporting misconduct for someone that's employed by them or someone that they're aware of. So we divide our complaints that way to track. Patrons can be colleagues, community members, anonymous complaints, something that comes out of the newspaper, or anything that we would refer internally after we did like a fingerprint background check or something like that.
Representative Springer has a question.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Vicki, you used the term investigate. And speaking as somebody who used to investigate, that can mean a quick phone call to see if there's any substantial reason for the complaint to weeks and months. Just define for me, if you could, what investigation means in your agency and the scope of that work.
Chairman Rowe, Representative Springer, what an investigation means to us is not quite as narrow as making a phone call, but it does require looking in. In every case, if someone's employed, we subpoena the school records. They are fully reviewed. Often the complainer is interviewed or called and talked with. And then the investigator reviews all the evidence. And if there is, if it's a little bit like the legal procedure, even if everything were true and you knew it wouldn't rise to the level of a misconduct, a short investigation report is prepared and forwarded to the commission, and then I read them and make a recommendation to the commission. They vote on the recommendation and often change my recommendation. That's how our statute's set up. But there is a written report on every complaint so that we can track it. And dismissals are shorter than charges. Oh, excuse me if I may add really quickly. The investigators are extremely well trained. Some of them are former law enforcement folks, and the ones who are not, we send to subsequent trainings about doing investigations.
Thanks. Thank you. Follow up. Can you give me a feel for the percentage of those complaints that are unfounded, if that is a term that you use. Not every complaint, a person is guilty of said issue.
Yes, I can. About not quite 60% are unfounded.
Representative Smith Warner.
Thank you. And as part of this process, when is the person against whom the complaint has been filed notified?
Usually when the investigator is ready to review the evidence and write the report.
So they do the investigation. Oh, I'm sorry. Follow
Go
up.
Go ahead.
So the records are subpoenaed and the investigation is done, and it's not until the investigator is writing the report that they talk to the person that supposedly did this?
Chair Monroe, Representative Smith Warner, that's correct. Because often, if the case is unfounded, the educator isn't interviewed, and we try to get those to the commission as quickly as possible. The turnaround time, Senator Monroe asked this on Friday, for our investigations on average is 12 months. So the educator often knows that there's a complaint against them, because if it's reported by a school district, the school district tells them. The subpoenaed records come from the school district, and so that's not a surprise. The patron complaints are sometimes anonymous. I just read a case last night where somebody sent in an article from a newspaper from 1999 that a teacher may have changed some grades. Would be an example of something that has to go through the process because it's been received. And that was in our office for like a year because the higher priority cases are investigated first. So it is an issue of, do you tell somebody and let it weigh over them until you get to the investigation, because we only have three investigators, or do you wait until you're ready to talk to them and open the investigation?
Representative Springer.
Are you done?
Could I just one more?
Go ahead.
So I guess my concern, thank you. My concern is kind of the definition of when that contact is. That if someone has been accused of something and their side of the story is not taken into account until there is a decision about whether it is investigation worthy, that doesn't sound.
So Chairman Monroe, Representative Smith Warner, please. Understand that everybody who has any chance of being charged is interviewed and given a chance to respond to the allegations. So the way our statutes are written, we are required to do an investigation, period, the end. What I was trying to explain is the complaint comes in the door, it's assigned to an investigator, and then the investigator gets to it when the higher priority cases have been completed. When the investigator gets to that case to investigate, the educator's contacted. And the educator then becomes part of the investigation process. I established fairly early on in this job that no case is going forward to the commission unless an educator has been interviewed regarding the charges. That was not the practice when I arrived. And I would agree with you. Everybody has a chance to rebut allegations against them. And as Heidi can testify, sometimes it's pages and pages of things that educators will tell us about their side of the story, and often it's compelling and makes it an easy decision for us to dismiss.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Given the information that approximately 60% of those cases are unfounded, and I'm assuming that means they don't go to the commission. So, and the person then is not typically notified unless and until it goes to the commission. First of all, I find it impossible to believe that a person doesn't know there's an investigation. I mean, districts talk. Whether there's confidentiality or not, people talk, and it gets out, especially smaller districts, I would think. But there, that seems to me to allow the opportunity for a person to go their career and not know that there's an unfounded complaint sitting back in their file. Did I misunderstand something?
Chairman Rowe, Representative Springer. No, because it would be, I would have to walk you through every thread of the procedure for you to have understood something. So any case that gets assigned to an investigator goes to the commission, period. There are no human in the office decisions made against allegations against an educator, because I may recommend to dismiss and the commission may see it differently because that's their job. So when I read those investigation reports prior to sending them to the commission, all I'm required to do is say whether I think it might be, my recommendation is to dismiss. My recommendation is to charge. My recommendation is to charge, and here's my proposed sanction. And we spend two-thirds of a day every commission meeting debating those among the commissioners and with our attorney present. So after it's done by law, every educator who had a complaint against them gets a letter that says that a complaint was received about you, it was investigated, and the commission dismissed. Or the a complaint was received against you, an investigation was conducted, and the commission is charging you with misconduct. You have 21 days to respond, in which you may ask for a hearing. And then if they ask for a hearing, then they go to the Office of Administrative Hearings. So we enter into that whole process that's become like court. It can take sometimes 18 months to get through the hearing process. After the hearing officer considers the case, writes their opinion, and sends it back to the commission reconsiders the hearing officer's decision. So this is how it happens with every licensure board in terms of the hearings.
Mr. Chair, I won't ask another question because I'm getting, I don't know if I've tracked it yet, and I think probably the best way for me to understand this is, certainly I assume that there's a policy in-house that explains the steps of an investigation. So I'd love to see that. If you would forward that to me, I think that will help me understand this process so I can say, well, if this has occurred, then here's the trajectory the commission is on. If this has occurred, here's the trajectory. And my hope is I look at that and it spells out very clearly how investigations are conducted.
Chairman Monroe, Representative Springer, I have a great document I give to new commissioners explaining that, and I have a PowerPoint slide that has all the little arrows and boxes that I'd be happy to give to you.
If you would send that to the committee administrator and we can all see it that way.
Senator Roebling.
Thank you. So it would be possible for a teacher to apply for a job and go and interview and do all that kind of stuff without knowing that they had a complaint filed against them, who later, when the complaint came to a point where they were contacted, even if it was dismissed, the new school district that they were working for, because these are a year long, could have asked them a question about whether you were under an investigation, and they would have said, no, I don't have any reason to believe it. And all that could be true, which could then lead to a problem in the next school district, because even though it was dismissed, they didn't disclose that they had an investigation going on. Is that correct?
Chairman Rowe, Representative Roebling, I have yet to see it happen because if they don't know, they don't know. And it's actually accurate and an honest response. The issue would be is if we sent them a letter telling them we're investigating because we were in the midst of it, and we could prove if a district asked that at that point in time we knew they knew. We have a pretty solid trail of our contact with educators. It's rare, but not, it does happen that educators don't fully disclose if they know.
Madam Co-Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to give you a brief picture of how it looks from the administrative side in the school. Let's say a student comes to me. This isn't a fictitious story. A student comes to me and says, Mr. So-and-so is being inappropriate with his behavior. Well, what does that look like? And then they demonstrate very candidly what that looks like. So what happens in a school is, okay, we as school principals will call our resources, which is at the district office, and say, this is a situation, what do we do? And they go, and Yeah, and I said, I don't have time to be an investigator. You guys, this is your job. And anyway, and so then immediately people at the district office will take all the information, begin an investigation, and then what also happens is the school board is usually immediately notified the same day, and they make a decision whether they are put on administrative leave while the investigation goes on. And that can go on for 6 weeks or 6 months. But that's just one example.
Depending on the issue,
okay.
You might have already...
Senator Roblin.
Thank you. You might have already let the police and or other people know.
Well, yes.
As a mandatory reporter.
As a mandatory reporter, yes. And so before that student leaves your office in 15 to 20 minutes, and you're sitting there thinking, oh, my gosh, I have this person's professional career in my hands. How am I going to handle this? And make sure that everything is done in an appropriate manner according to the statutes.
Representative Warner.
Thank you, Chair. Well, and not to belabor this too far, and my question in that would be, and when do you tell the teacher?
That is up to the district office, and they have somebody that will come and talk to the teacher AESAP. They're usually released from their current teaching assignment that day.
I'm concerned about the timing. You meet once every 3 months, right? Do you meet here in Salem? So
frequently,
okay. So the whole commission comes together and meets in person, not on the telephone.
Correct.
And you go over any cases that are presented to you, but the whole process takes an average of a year?
Correct. Although Chairman,
go ahead.
There's a variety of reasons for why. So I can give you two examples from my district, quickly. One, sexual misconduct case took multiple years to wrap up because there was a police investigation as well. And TSPC cannot investigate until the police investigation is complete. But the start date for that investigation was the very day that I sent everything to TSPC, but it took a long time for TSPC to be able to finish, take action. Teacher's license was revoked in that situation. Different scenario, I had a test impropriety situation that was wrapped up and done by the commission in far less than a year, a few months. So depending on the level of severity, there can be a lot of steps in between, and that's that hearings process that Vicki referenced. The other piece that's really important to keep in mind is that's why there's the prioritization of cases, and that's exactly why some of them take a very long time and others do not. Depends on the severity, but anything that's an absolute endangerment of a child is handled with ultimate priority. And so, Senator Roblin, it's true that there could be someone who moves on to a different district. However, it would be exceptionally difficult for that to be for something that was extreme misconduct in reference to a child, in my thoughts.
And Chair Monroe, last night I read a case that was 3 months old. In other words, it was sufficiently concerning enough that it goes ahead. We will often have cases that come in between commission meetings that make it to the next commission meeting if we're concerned about the behavior. So when you have a three-month-old case, something like an old article from another state is going to slip down the order of priority, which makes the average of 12 months, it's just an average. So on the slide after this, I can show you the commission considers anywhere from 200 to 280 cases a year. So later on in KPMs, I can show you that we have never been able to keep up with the number of complaints that have come in, but we've gotten very close, and that's why we have a backlog.
Well, we all know that justice delayed is justice denied. And so, you know, keeping somebody dangling for a year or more is troubling to me. I'd like to see, and that's why you're coming to us and with higher fees and so on, to be able to hire some additional people to move the timeline up a little, and I certainly support that. Representative Taylor.
Yes, thank you, Senator Monroe. So obviously this is a very serious responsibility that you have. This is about teachers in the room on a daily basis with children. And I agree with my colleagues that making certain that teachers are treated appropriately, and I guess it's, I would say it's up for discussion as to when they should be informed. But on the other side of that, how are parents and students, especially students who are older in junior high and high school, how are, what efforts do you do to communicate to families throughout the state that they can file a complaint against a teacher? Because I would venture to bet that most folks don't feel that they know how to go about doing that. So I'm just wondering, I mean, there's nothing that comes home in backpacks or anything like that, that this is what's expected, because it seems to make sense to me that it should be very clear. The teachers would know this is what's acceptable, unacceptable, and the parents and the students, you know, older students, obviously, that this is what's acceptable and not acceptable, so that everybody understands what happens and what the process is. And I was just wondering what information is handed out to parents and to families at this point.
Chair Monroe, Representative Taylor, we don't have the staffing capacity to do a huge communication program, but what we do have on our home webpage is on the left-hand side, it says complaint against an educator.
Okay.
So if anybody goes there, they can find it immediately. Parents find us pretty easily, either from the schools or by searching around on the web. If they go to the Department of Ed refers them to us. Almost immediately. So we're able to link up with them. We would love to be able to communicate more. Every educator signs a statement of professional, it's not conduct, it's escaping me right now, but it's like ethics. Every time they turn in an application, I will do no harm. It's like the physician, I will do no harm statement to remind them of their duty. The only other thing I wanted to mention is it's all licensed educators. It's not just teachers. It's administrators, school counselors, school psychologists, school social workers that we also investigate that we license. So.
Okay, we need to keep
move
going.
On. Okay, yeah. I will skip over the sanctions and just and quickly show you. This was to Representative Springer's point. No further action is how we track school district reports, dismissals, or how we track patron reports. And as you can see, about two-thirds of the cases that went before the commission last year, last calendar year, were dismissed. And this was just to give you an idea. So I'm going to move quickly into our budget environment issues. As we've mentioned before, we are funded exclusively by licensure fees. We are currently hampered by a statutory cap on our fees of $100. That cap has been there since 2005, and we charge all the way up to the cap for applications. And I just want to tell you that our focus in the last two biennia has been on fiscal solvency. In other words, even given the declining revenues, making sure that the agency fiscally is not weakened. This graphic just gives you a very good idea of the drop in revenue and as compared to our ending.
Mr. Springer.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Thank you for your patience. So if we don't need to back up slides at all, I just want to mention this and encourage. I'm looking at the educator complaint form right now online, and the four questions are name the person, the employing district, their position, and the nature of complaint, and it says summarize it up to two pages. Being one who has filled out a ton of forms for investigations and conducted tons and tons of investigations myself, so I know that number one, people want to tell their whole story, and there's value in that, but they want to tell their whole story when really there's a handful of key facts that lead you on the path to get the best and the quickest resolution. I would encourage on this form that some things like where this occurred and specifics of the incident and who may be involved would help expedite perhaps that investigation process. Just food for thought.
Not much.
Excellent, thank you. great suggestions. I've looked at that form 100 times, but I don't investigate. The one thing I do want to point out is the far right bar is our projected revenue for this biennium, which is just using all the accounting measures, which makes it look like we will be slightly higher than we were. Right now, our monthly revenue is coming in at about $182,000, whereas last biennium it was $172,000. So, to give you an idea. Moving on. Our cost containment measures, as I said, to remain fiscally solvent has been to eliminate positions that happened in the last biennial budget and to hold vacancies open. At the beginning of this biennium, I had no idea what our revenue stream was going to look like. We completely eliminated overtime, and we got rid of paper licenses, which saved us over $100,000 in postage. And our AG cost containment is we have an investigator at a higher level who actually works directly with the AG's office and writes our notices, which saves us from paying attorney hourly fees for that kind of action. And it has actually leveled our AG costs and had them drop slightly. So that was a worthwhile endeavor.
Representative Smith Warner.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Can I just, on the revenue and positions history, so it looks on that as though you had the revenue to have more staff, but do not. Am I reading that wrong?
Chairman Rowe, Representative Smith Warner, we had slightly more revenue. We did not know that our ending fund balance for last biennium was going to come in around a million. I mean, we need at least $600,000 to $650,000 ending fund balance for fiscal solvency for 3 months of operation. So there is room in there for possibly one position, maybe one and a half positions.
Because it looks pretty consistent across there that your ending fund balance is well beyond that.
$400,000 is about one and a half to two positions.
Okay.
About. Maybe three on lower level pay jobs.
Mr. Chair, I think the point that Ms. Chamberlain raised, though, is the unexpected sort of end of the biennium increase in revenues. Up to that point, they were projecting quite significantly lower revenues. So it's sort of a timing issue, too, of when you know and when you don't know.
Chairman Rowan, Representative Smith Warner, our drop in revenue happened so dramatically, we actually had to hold several positions vacant, and we had been given the authority to spend $5.3 million last biennium, and as you can see, our revenue came in at 4.6, and I was scrambling to make sure that we didn't go significantly in the hole, because I discovered our revenue problem just not quite 1 year into the biennium. So finding that savings in 1 year did require some drastic cuts, and frankly didn't expect the ending balance to be that good. I will tell you that we are currently fully staffed up for all our authorized positions. So clearly the declining budget has had an impact on our performance, and I think this is the direction that Representative Smith Warner is headed. And to Representative Taylor's point, it doesn't allow us to have people out in the field working with school districts or having newsletters or making communications with districts, which would be something that would be great to have. If you move to the next slide, I'll move quickly through our four key performance measures. We have a performance measure that we've had since 2002 to track our email and phone call backlogs. I will tell you right now that we are unable to track our phone call backlogs because we don't have a messaging system. It takes one FTE half a day to take messages off of a message system and then record them into the licensure file, which it takes someone off of the phones or takes someone off of answering email. So you can see our performance here in 2014 is only tracking email, even though it says phone call response. So we are asking for a change in that KPM to take the phones out. We would need something, we would need several more positions to take phone calls, take messages, and return phone calls.
Representative Springer?
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. I don't think I understand. Truly, I don't think I do. So if somebody calls TSPC, I assume they can leave a phone message? They can't.
Chairman Rowe, Representative Springer, they cannot.
Okay, but if they call between 8 and 5 Monday through Friday, they'll get a person.
Chairman Rowe, Representative Springer, yes, if they're willing to wait for the person to answer the phone. The phones are constantly personed.
Okay. How, 12 months a year?
Yes.
Follow up.
Go ahead.
Please. How many people are answering the phone on any given day?
I have three public service reps, and we have one person who answers the phones.
Okay.
Is that four?
Yes. Thank you.
Well,
go ahead.
I took that as you have one person that answers the phone?
Chairman Rowe, Representative Springer, we have one person who answers the phone during that, well, one and a half. We will have somebody answering phones sometimes in the back. We were only had two public service reps till we discovered our revenue was coming in steady, and we've just staffed up with a new public service rep who has to learn the rules and how to give the right answers. He's been on board for about 2 weeks. So while one person is answering the phone, the other person is returning email. And the one thing we make sure is that that during the entire time the office is open, including lunch, someone is at the phone to answer the phone. If you have two people who are, that's their responsibility to do that. If one of them's sick, then we have to pull somebody off of issuing licenses to come over and cover the phones. The second part of that is they are also the folks who have to help us open mail and help us do some data entry. This is how slim and tiny we are staffed. So I have about eight people in the office who have the knowledge to answer phones, answer email, and issue licenses. And they also open the mail, hand data enter until we get to the part about getting our online licensure system. So any illness, vacation, or interruption of coming to work has an impact on performance because people have to be shuffled around.
Thank you. I think I understand better now.
Go ahead.
Thank you. So again, unless we have the ability to staff up significantly, we'd like to ask that the phone portion of that KPM be removed. And we'd like to change the target from 60 to 50 in order to have it be more achievable. But I will tell you in our policy packages how we hope to address some of this backlog.
Representative Taylor?
Chair Monroe, I'm sorry. I think I perhaps am not understanding something. Why would we remove phone calls from the KPM when that sounds like a problem area? Shouldn't we be tracking that?
Chairman Rowe, Representative Taylor, we can't track it, I think, is the problem I'm trying to say. So when we had this and we were taking messages and there were six public service reps in the agency, we had someone dedicated to, we would allow them to leave messages, and we had someone dedicated to listening to those messages and transcribing them into the electronic file. And again, it takes half to two-thirds a day to do that if people leave them over the weekend or leave them overnight or before operating hours. So right now, the KPM is respond to email and phone calls. That would be phone messages, probably more appropriately, in 3 days. What we watch is how long people are holding, and we feel very successful if we can keep that hold time close to 15 minutes if possible. But I have people at the end of the day who are sometimes there 40 minutes answering the people holding on the phone. We don't just shut the line down at 5. If anyone's holding, we stay and answer the phones.
This is not good. Boy, I hate it when I call somebody and they, can I put you on hold? And 40 minutes later, you're still on hold.
Sounds like the IRS phone call service.
Anyway, go ahead. We need to get you more help.
In reference to this slide, this is where the commission really takes the heat. So there are 17 of us in the field answering to patrons constantly. And so this is an area of extreme priority for the commission. We've requested backlog reports that we track at every commission meeting. We monitor all of the email updates, the investigation updates, the licenses issued. We've also worked to implement additional steps to evaluation procedures so that we can ensure that our staff understands how important turning around licenses is to the broader commission. And there has been much progress made in that area, however, not enough. And so the commissioners as a whole are not pleased, and neither is Vicky, to my knowledge, with the response time, with the license time. None of that is something that we feel successful with at this time. However, and that was one of my ahas when I joined the commission, is it's really a situation of we're in this situation that is really untenable between the paper system, the lack of staff, the technology challenges that we've had. And so that's why we're pushing forward as a commission with the fee increase, with the online system, and with additional staffing, because none of us want to continue on with those timelines.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is probably going to be a touchy question, and I apologize, but has the governor's office or anybody ever, and the reason I ask is a couple of biennia back on a different subcommittee, we were actually looking at rolling an agency into another larger agency. Has that ever been studied or reviewed or questioned about because of some of the challenges with IT and some of those things? Has it been looked at? Would it make sense to bring TSPC into ODE or something, so that those support services for, you know, with the other small agency, it was contracting and some of those things that they really needed help with. So in that particular case, we didn't roll the whole small agency into the larger agency, but we did require them to do certain outsourcing with the larger agency.
Chairman Rowe, Representative Huffman, it's not sensitive at all. I approached ODE about 3 years ago about coinciding our servers and sharing that kind of capacity issue, and after a study they concluded we couldn't do that. There were all kinds of reasons, so we went to DAS, who actually helped us do some significant things. I think that this is a staffing issue, and I'm not sure capacity would be improved. We're to the point this week to sign our agreement with NICUSA to put our online system up, and which would significantly improve what we're doing. The department doesn't perform licensure functions. Everything we do is unique from any function in that office, and I'm not sure I can think of how they could staff it differently unless they use funds other than other funds to pay for the positions. I do want to say that one of the reasons we've seen the horrific drop in performance is that the people we laid off were the people who were behind the scenes opening the mail, doing data entry, and doing support positions that still have to be done because all our paperwork comes in and has to be handled by hand, which required us to pull people off who can answer email, answer phones, and issue licenses to perform those duties. And I started immediately at the beginning of this biennium on this online system, received legislative approval to implement it, and I expect to see a significant change in performance the second we're not opening $15,000 worth of applications every Monday because a weekend has built it up, sort of thing. So I did investigate it, and we do partner with the department by exchanging data. We send them licensure data weekly. They send us employment data as soon as it comes back from the district reports, and we have a really good working agreement that way.
Representative Taylor.
Thank you, Chairman Rowe. I'm sorry, you probably feel like you're being beat up here, and I know that, but Heidi, we appreciate that you've stepped in, and obviously you're taking this seriously and wanting to move the commission forward, and I think that we see that and appreciate that. Ms. Chamberlain, I know that you have your plate full and you have a lot of obstacles here between the complaints and the licensure and et cetera. So how many but when we start talking about adding FTE, how many are you thinking in grand total you will need in order to solve? There seems to be, you know, quite an extensive list of problem areas. So how many, ideally, if you could have your druthers, would you need in order to not have the backlog and be able to handle complaints and et cetera?
Chair Monroe, Representative Taylor, I've asked for 6 FTE.
Okay.
In our policy packages, and this is based on my inability to project the exact impact the online system is going to have.
Okay.
I did hire somebody to do the direct the licensure unit who came from Montana, who had just come through moving their whole system over to an online system. She's pretty confident that with close to our current staffing, once we get that system in place and we're not handling paper, that we should be able to not only catch up but stay caught up. So I've asked for another person to answer the phones and email, another person to issue licenses, an investigator, another investigative support person, because those cases have to be handled, and in addition to some support in the program approval and administrative area. And thank you for acknowledging it's very embarrassing to show up and see a turnaround in your performance like we had. 2.5 years ago, we were returning license applications in 20 days. We were the fastest agency in the nation. It was very exciting at the time. I'm not sure we have ever been able to keep up with the investigations and be staffed adequately. When I arrived here, we had one investigator. We now have 4, one of them who works with the AG's office. But clearly, as you can see from the statistics, we are unable to keep up even when we were fully staffed.
Okay.
So moving on, this is the percent of applications completed within 20 days, and obviously in the past biennium we've taken a very serious hit. These are calendar years, and we are not asking for any change to that KPM because I know it's achievable, and I know that we can get to where nearly 100% of them are complete are issued in less than 20 days. So I've already explained the impacts. It's because our staffing is too thin and people are covering in. I open mail, my director of licensure opens mail, none of us are too proud to pitch in and help when we need to do that. I even entered data over Christmas vacation because we had so many people out. It's okay. It's really good to do. Moving to the investigation backlog, I wanted to give you a really good history of sort of how we have been losing ground since 2011, as you can see. And then in 2014, we took a very serious hit in performance because I lost an investigator due to a death in her family, and then our inability to turn the position over. We had 2 recruitments to hire, and then when someone comes in, they have to get up to speed. So it had a huge impact on our performance. Other than that, since 2008, we've had either limited duration or fully funded 3 investigators. So we can't operate with any less than 3 investigators. I do expect that one investigator will have a significant impact on the turnaround and perhaps maybe more. This is an area that is human performance dependent and fact dependent. So if you get a complicated case, it takes longer. It's not something I think that can be cured by technology, just merely staffing. So this our KPM was getting cases resolved in 180 days. The only way to resolve a case is the complaint comes in, you investigate it, and then you dismiss it, or it comes in and somehow you get a default order and it is then concluded. Charges then, like I explained, move through the hearing process. So the statistics we had before 2011, I had someone else in the office counting them. When I went back and checked their work this year, because I did the look back, I discovered their method had to be flawed. And so I was able to go back 4 years to show you what our actual performance on this KPM was. We'll find time between now and next year to finish the other years and make sure that they're accurately reflected. We are I am asking for a change in this KPM, and that is that the percent of complaints investigated, not cases resolved, is moved to 9 months. I told you right now our average is 12 months. I think 9 months is an achievable goal. And I do want to mention that we have started a new system where we're attempting to move those dismissals through much more quickly, where they get an investigation, but they're written up in a shorter report so that we can focus our time on the actual misconduct. And then our final performance area is customer satisfaction. And if you look in 2008, 9, and 10, it was very high. We send a survey out only with licensees when their license is issued and ask them how was it, how did the agency do. And then we count the excellent and above averages only. We don't count the average and below. So as you can see, in 2009, we're up to 64%. It is no surprise in 2014 that it's 23%. I understand completely the frustration that people have with the agency. It's frustrating not being able to do anything about it. So we are not requesting any changes to this KPM. I think it's a very good measure of how the agency is doing and their perceptions in the field. All right, so looking ahead, I think there's only one thing we can do, and that's focus on streamlining and modernizing and strengthening our program. And here are some of our initiatives.
So in the coming biennium, what we hope to do is change the name to the Professional Educator Standards Board. There's a variety of reasons for that, but perhaps most importantly, we have to change the agency entirely. And one of the ways to make sure that we have indicated that we're doing so is to update the name. Also, this reflects that it's not simply teachers that are licensed, it's all educators. Oh, all licensed educators. Hiring the director for licensure and professional practices, developing our online application system, license redesign, which has been a very rigorous process, and I was very thankful for Representative Smith Warner's question last week about the variety of licenses that we have, because it is absolutely an untenable amount and configuration. So the streamlining of that has been a process that we are deep into with higher ed representatives from the profession, as well as ODE and OEIB, and it's been very exciting to see the license redesign efforts moving forward, especially in the areas of CTE.
Representative Huffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Heidi, because of the line of questioning and some of the disappointing outcomes on the KPMs, what is the commission doing? What kind of direction are you giving Vicki to, because Vicki's been around 13 years. I mean, she's seasoned. The commissioners don't hang around that long. What kind of hands-on oversight is the commission actually doing to resolve some of these challenges?
So first off, if we back up further to the backlog reports and making sure that we have the actual data, the other thing we've been, and it's difficult because we can't be, it's not our job to micromanage. However, we are setting the expectations for the agency, and with both investigations, license issuance, and timeliness and customer service. So everything that you see here are the commission initiatives, and they are intended to direct essentially a reestablishment of the agency.
Okay, so strong commission buy-in.
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Great, we're going. We are going to hopefully finish TSPC today, but we will not get to anything else. So those of you that are waiting, you are released.
Thanks, Ron.
Not you.
You just got here.
I thought you were talking about Al. Please go ahead.
Thank you. The license redesign process will be absolutely essential for the online licensing process as well. And so we're trying to make sure that those two efforts are coordinated in a timely manner. And then also strengthening the education preparation programs. That goes back to the requirements that we've added to ed prep programs, as well as the partnerships with them. Streamlining professional practices and improving communications and field assistance. It was not that long ago that we had regular communication with the field, and we had support directly connected to individual districts. So if I had a question, I knew exactly who I could call, and I didn't have to worry about playing phone tag with that person. That's the level of customer service we'd like to see again.
Also, our online system is another direction. I've talked about it. It's an application system that Nick doesn't want us to call it a database, and we try to honor that. I think that I explained how cumbersome it is dealing with our mail, so this will be a very modern way to go on and electronically fill out their applications.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. And maybe you've said it and I forgot. What is the projected date of that going live?
Chairman Rowe, Representative Springer, we're expecting it to be live about September 2015. The agreement is back from the DOJ, and I learned Friday evening it's ready this week to be signed, and they are ready to roll out. If they're hopeful, it may come out in August, but all phases will be fully operational by January 2016.
Thank you.
You're welcome. I think that it's important moving on that I remember I told you we are borrowing Hawaii's codes, which are going to save us a significant amount of time making it operational. And after doing a costing measure, we've determined that a $10 convenience fee will go along with the application, and that's related to the fee increase we're asking for. We asked for to move our applications from 100 to 140, taking into account that $10 will be paid separately by each applicant. It would be like going to your ATM, only a little bit more. And that goes directly to Nick. That money goes into continuing to build our system, paying for all the development that they've done, and the ongoing maintenance of the system after it's up and running. So, and there's the dates for you.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Smith Warner.
So we, thank you, Mr. Chair. So there's a contract that TSPC is in with Nick, and in addition to any payment for that, Nick also gets this $10 technology fee for every application?
So, Chairman Rowe, Representative Smith Warner, no other money is going to Nick other than the $10 associated with each application fee. We don't have any line items in our budget. We haven't paid them any other money. So this fully sustains the development, operation, and maintenance of the system. All right. So the goal will be to eliminate the licensure backlog. Just quickly, we've redesigned licenses. I just want to summarize this and not spend too much time. We have a system that was developed from 65 to 99, and it was kept in place, and then a new licensure system that was developed in 1999 before I arrived here. That's what we have. But we have way too many licenses in the field, and we brought you that information this morning, all the licenses and the numbers that we have, and the endorsements like you asked last week. But we would move everybody on current licenses into the new license system, and everybody would have the same duties. It would be way less confusing. It'd be a tiered license with a novice beginning license, a professional license, and then an opportunity for teacher leaders to be recognized as distinguished teacher leaders. And this was legislation that was passed in 2013, and we've created the licenses, and we're still working on the pathway. We are also in the process of looking at redesigning the CTE licenses, as I talked about on Friday. Because of all of our state infusion of money, there's lots of opportunities there. We'll convene a stakeholder group that involves industry and business representatives along with current CTE teachers and other folks. We are also looking to strengthen our preparation programs, and we raise the standards to national standards. Everything we look at, we start with the national standards and use that as our framework. As I mentioned last week, I said I had talked about this. We've adopted the EdTPA teacher performance assessment for all the new candidates who will be coming out of programs. And part of what we've asked for staffing is to help us review programs more efficiently. We're asking for a compliance specialist when we get there to the policy option packages so that we can train our review teams and get some assistance in that area. Right now I have 0.8 FTE who works on that, also my deputy, also my HR person. So in the professional practices area or discipline areas we talked about, we have one of our proposals asked for a new investigator, but we're also asking for an office assistant one who would come in and scan all our paper docs. It's the last part of our agency that's fully paper. And during this upcoming biennium, we're going to look for software to allow us to move fully digital in our discipline process, and that paper would disappear and hopefully refine the process. And finally, we believe with the increased staffing, we can improve our communications with the field like we had before, where we have a newsletter that goes out that discusses every area of the license, what's going on in licensure, what's not the licensee office, what's going on in professional practices. And even the commission has asked in our last newsletter we put out, what are the kind of things that trip teachers up and may result in a complaint against them to remind them about ongoing vigilance about their conduct. So really quickly, legislatively, we have two bills up. House Bill 2411 has the renaming of the agency, the new redesigned system, and an increase in our fee caps. The bill has a $500 fee cap, but we've already requested amendments to move that to $350. We've realized through costing it shouldn't have to be above that, and we have that in. House Bill 2412 is a housekeeping bill that just has minor policy changes in it. Our five policy option packages, one is our fee increase. The second one would address the backlog in licensure. The third one, the backlog in investigation. The fourth one is our program approval support I just mentioned. And then the fifth one is administrative support to our administrative staff. We cut that in half when we made our budget cuts. And you'll notice my policy option packages aren't numbered accurately. That was my fault, but this is the priority order. So quickly, here is the proposed fee increase. I want to make sure we keep it very transparent that $10 is going to NIC. That's how it will be on the front page. Educators will know that money is not coming to TSPC. Nothing needs to change in our fingerprints, but this would be the change, proposed rate changes generally in our current application system. Then with the backlog.
I'm Springer.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. So you're on, you renew every 2 years, right?
Chairman Rowe, Representative Springer, our licenses are 3-year licenses or 5-year licenses?
Thank you. Follow up, please.
Go ahead.
So, and this $10 fee is going to be on each license, correct? Each transaction when it is online.
Chairman Rowe, Representative Springer, it will only be on each application filed. So, in other words, the application will be filed and the educator can upload documents, and they may upload documents 2 weeks later. There's no charge for that. They'll just upload documents. The only charge will be when they apply for a new license or apply for the actual renewal, and that's it.
Okay. So, knowing that, I just want to be careful that we're looking down the road to see if we will need to change or increase the frequency of that, because now we're also changing the fee structure to the vendor. So I just want to be very aware and put on record, we want to be careful of that, because it could be tempting, maybe, to say, oh, let's do this every 2 years, and now we're adding a $10 fee on a renewal and increasing that.
Chairman Rowe, Representative Springer, I've been very cognizant of that and have had ongoing conversations with Nick to make sure that we have accountings for the money that's received and how it comes up against development. And I know the legislative oversight has that as well. And I would fully expect at any time in the future, if we did change the terms in the licenses, that the convenience fee would concomitantly be reduced because it shouldn't change their maintenance fees or other things. I agree.
Senator Thompson.
Yes, thank you, Chairman Rowe. The charter school registrations, I take it to read, is $75. Renewals are $25. And then, so both of those will be $140.
Chairman Rowe and Senator Thompson, that's the proposal.
Follow up?
Go ahead.
So that looks like a pretty, on the renewals to charter schools in relationship to the how the other current fees and proposed fees. It seems like a pretty big jump on renewals to that. What was the reason for that?
Chairman Rowe, Senator Thompson, when charter schools were enacted, it was the fee was put in statute and it was kept down, and part of the proposed legislation is to increase the fee. It takes the same amount of work and the same amount of time to process that license. So fundamentally, everybody who's applying for anything but a charter school registry is subsidizing that process, and currently, that $75 fee is supposed to include the fingerprint fee. So when they initially, when charter school folks get their license, their $75 includes that $57. And it's not a high volume area, but the fees are intended to cover the cost of the staffing we need to produce the license.
Okay.
Policy package 105, the licensure and email backlog. As I mentioned earlier, this has a public service rep to improve, perhaps put two people on the phone like we used to have at the height of our public service rep staffing, and one additional person to issue licenses. And we expect, I asked for limited duration intentionally so that we could see what the impact of the online system is. And with this staffing, I believe by the next budget cycle, we will be able to predict whether we would ask for limited duration again, not ask for it at all, or ask for it permanently. But right now, I'm guessing in terms of the impact of our online application system. The professional practices staff also the same thing, although I'm starting to believe it possibly may need to be permanent, but we did request a limited duration additional investigator position, and again, the position that office assistant to is to scan all those paper documents we have because our licensure discipline files are all still a paper. Again, limited duration. Clearly, I don't know how far someone will get on the scanning over the biennium, so we didn't ask for permanent funding. It's possible that we'll have a very good idea about the impact of an additional full-time investigator on our backlogs, and it's possible that that may need to be permanent also in order to avoid the backlogs and get a quicker turnaround on the cases. I think all of us believe that it would be nice to have that turnaround be much, much quicker. The next position is approval compliance. This is for site visit reviews. As I mentioned on Friday, we send real live bodies out to the universities to review the data. And to refresh your memory, we look at how they're assessing the candidates, what the qualifications of their faculty are, what their field experiences look like, and what kind of data do they have to know that they're producing high quality candidates. That's teachers, administrators, and counselors. And this person will be able to help us train more teams, stay on top of it, read the reports, and keep that whole process organized, because as I mentioned, the one person I have doing that also has significant other duties.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Smith Warner.
Thank you. Just I understand that the numbers probably include benefits, retirement, all that, but I gotta say, some of the personal services numbers seem very high. And particularly my main, the difference between, actually, no, I guess they're similar. So I just wondered if you had any thoughts about that.
Chairman Rowe and Representative Smith-Warner.
Where those numbers come from. So.
Yes, I know precisely where they come from, but I wouldn't be able to divvy it up. Actually, it's 2 years. It's mm-hmm. over the course of the biennium.
You can stop right there.
Yes. Okay.
Yes. Thank you. I was thinking.
And there's
a
large data piece in there.
Thank you.
All right. You're welcome.
Right. Divided in half.
Yes. We'd all like that kind of pay and desks and things like that. And finally, administrative support. I had 6 managers 2.5 years ago. We are down to 3. Doing administrative rules and all kinds of things. I don't have an executive assistant or other kind of support falls onto my desk. And this is a requested low-level management position to help us get our security plan out, help with the budget and the administrative rules and other serious administrative things that we have no staffing to do right now. This is our proposed org chart. Again, very slimly organized by program approval, investigations, and licensure, and a slim management team. And finally, I've made every attempt to quantify how you'll know if we're doing a good job.
Representative Springer.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Do you have a current org chart that we could see?
Yes, it was back on slide.
Oh, it was in the beginning. I'm sorry. Yeah. I forgot over the weekend. I will find that.
Okay.
Thank you.
You're welcome. I actually didn't bring my other slides, so thank you. For the fee increase, we want to emphasize there will not be a fee increase the first front end of the biennium, because by the time our budget gets through and by the time we communicate to the field, we want to have a solid start date. Yeah, our communications always go up when you make any change in fees because people don't get word and then they call in surprised, right? So we want to use the 6 months between the end of the session and implementing it. And Heidi found that the org chart's on slide 8.
Thank you.
So that's how we costed our revenue. It's just 18 months with that fee increase. In terms of the staffing, we know we can get to 20 days because we've been at 20 days, and that was when, again, we weren't pulling our people issuing licenses off to do other support functions. So we can get that email backlog caught up. We were caught up when I was here 2 years ago. In fact, we were just like days out issuing emails. So those staffing cuts have had an enormous impact on our performance. I went back 4 years and did the average number of cases that investigators can complete a year, and it comes right out at about 80. Again, I said that's a human performance issue, so I know that's what our turnaround is. One more investigator will make a significant difference in our backlog. The unknown we can't calculate for is the number of complaints that come in. We just don't know year from year, but they've been steady, as I've mentioned, since 2005, over 200. Fortunately, they're down from 290. We were down about 30 cases. And I already mentioned all the efforts we're going to make in program approval, but we can come back and tell the legislature how well that went, how quickly we can turn around program reports and get them to the commission for review and accreditation much more quickly. And again, I gave you the list of the reasons and what we can do with our new administrative staff, and we can certainly tell you what a difference it would make.
So you can report to us in the 2016 session, the short session, how things are coming along and whether everything's working out the way we planned.
Senator Monroe, that would be a pleasure to come back and do.
We'll look forward to it.
Keep in mind, we'll be 1 month into our fee increase.
Yes.
So, I did want to point out we brought back responses to some questions on the paraprofessional certification. I was able to Google every state and find out at least a link here to the states that are. One or two of them are optional, I believe. I tried very hard to find mandatory, but all the no's are definitely no. They don't certify or paraprofessionals at all. And we had a question about the number of licenses, so we brought a document that will go into your system that has the teaching licenses broke down, the administrative licenses, and the professional services, and finally all the endorsements.
Senator Roblin.
Thank you. I do. We go through this, and I have been involved as a principal and all that with this agency. And the one thing that I like to remind after we get done, because we get into the weeds, is that it's a really amazing profession. It's less than a third of a percent that actually get sent to here to investigate. So, you know, the people who are in education are really a pretty amazing group of individuals who work really hard, whether they're administrators or teachers or whatever. And as a percentage of the whole profession, very few of them ever end up there. And everybody takes it very seriously if they do, because that's really important. But as a profession as a whole, it's less than a third of a percent that actually get reported on an annual basis if you're talking about 261,000 licenses. That's a pretty small number. We don't want one. I mean, everybody would agree. But I just, sometimes we forget that when we, because the one is in our mind and the newspapers make it big. Most of our professionals do a great job every day.
Senator Roblin, real quickly, less than a third of a percent for the sexual misconduct. If you did the complaints, it's about 4%, and if you do the charge, it's just right at 1%.
Yeah.
And we need to hear from Lisa, Representative Smith Warner.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. And I apologize, this is going back. I had a question I had meant to ask during the discussion about this biennium's budget. So you guys had a move, a physical move. Did that impact the kind of the two things I was looking at and thinking about were, in this last biennium, did overtime impact your budget because you did have reduced staff? And did that move impact your budget as well? Or did you guys move? I understand you're in a different place now than you used to be. And whether those two things impacted this biennium that's in a maybe won't be replicable in the next biennium.
Senator Monroe and Representative Smith Warner, we moved in 2011, so it was a biennium before last. Okay. Last biennium, not this. It was biennium before last. All right, so it was, there were no move costs in here. And we had some overtime, but we couldn't see that it had a significant impact on performance. And because folks are burned out, they're switching jobs, they're moving back and forth, it has been difficult to quantify that paying the overtime actually netted better results.
Okay. Yeah. Lisa, you're on. You have all of 8 minutes. Sorry.
And Mr. Chair, I hope to do this in less than one. My name is Lisa Pearson with the Department of Administrative Services, and I'm going to provide a brief recap of the material that you just heard. So, as we learned, the agency's emerging issues are the reduction in applications for licensing following the Great Recession and its impact on school budgets, a licensing backlog and increased complaints, and the Teacher Standards and Practices Commission falls into the 10-year plan education vision for Oregonians are equipped with the knowledge and skills for rewarding careers. This is just a slide giving a brief history of the agency's expenditures, the amount that actually was spent, and then the amount that's proposed to be spent in the governor's budget. And as you can see, the governor's budget is higher than the previous two biennia, and that is because it proposes to bring in some revenue from the fee increase, which leads us to the next slide. And the next slide shows, as you go from the second column on the left-hand side of the screen, the decline in revenue And then on the far right-hand bar, that's the governor's proposed revenue amount. The investments include the fee revenue from House Bill 2411. That brings in about $1.1 million of additional revenue, assuming a $140 basic fee versus $100 previously. And that would be spent on two limited duration positions to reduce disciplinary backlog, a permanent position for essentially administrative support to free up existing executive staff so that they can attend to executive functions more closely, a permanent position for the review of the educator preparedness program, and then finally two limited duration positions to reduce the licensing backlog. And that essentially is the proposed budget in a nutshell.
Representative Huffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Going from 100 to 140 is a substantial increase, and I would hope that we could give some solid assurances to licensees that it's going to be worth their money to do that in time cut, application times cut, et cetera, and so on.
Well, I know if I was still teaching, I'd rather pay a little more than stay on the phone for 40 minutes. Senator Thompson.
Yeah, just a little observation. I haven't been on this committee before, but I've been on the Maine Ways and Means Committee for 4 years, and probably next to DEQ, this commission gets railed on more than anybody, and that's just, I have no opinion on it because this is the first budget I've sat through, and I know because of the even before the recession, they were getting railed on. So I don't know. I think we're going to have a lot of trouble with this. I think we're going to hear a lot of crackles and jokes about changing the name. You know, do we have to change the name because we haven't been doing a good job? And by doing that, is it going to change the outcomes and the perception of this commission? I think we've got a long road to hoe to get this through the full body.
Well, I remember 2 years ago when we went over their budget, your predecessor, Senator Girard, argued strongly that their fees are way too low to do the kind of job we want them to do. That compared to fees for other agencies, they're really cheap. Consider their 3 to 5 year for $100. We want them to be able to do their job. You've got a couple ladies here that I think are really into this, that understand what needs to happen for the agency to work effectively and function properly. And they've come to us with a presentation asking us for help. And so we will be, this subcommittee at some point when the big co-chairs tell us, we will be going through this budget and we will be voting on whether or not we agree that they need this assistance in order to do their job right. So members, this is an agency that has been criticized a lot. Senator Thompson, you're absolutely right. So members of this subcommittee are gonna have an important job to do. If you have serious concerns about the recommendations, talk to me or talk to Representative Comp. We'll be happy to have that discussion with you. I want to give them the tools they need to do their job right. Okay, other questions or comments? Senator Thompson.
It was great being here with you guys on a Monday.
So good to have you.
Are your trees blooming yet?
Not yet, thank goodness.
Well, yeah, but they start blooming now, and then you have a cold snap, you're in trouble. Man runs apples and pears if you don't know. Thank you very much, everybody, and we will see you tomorrow, and we are adjourned.
I will. That will get to my wife, I guarantee.
And we are adjourned.
I will. That will get to my wife.